Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 100.5 FM, Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, April 26, 2013. I am your host, Jackie McIntosh, and I am joined here in studio today by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hello.
Welcome.
And I'm on the controls today.
Yes. Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and compassionate living radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary that you need to keep you up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement toward a world in which non-human animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the basic right to live free from exploitation. This program can be heard every Friday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and is available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org after airing. Today, Allison will speak about an article reflecting on the recent ag gag laws and bringing to light the proposition to have webcams installed in slaughterhouses. And this ag gag law is something that's being proposed in many states in the U.S. And the alternative is the webcams, which we're hoping, you know, will go ahead. Alyssa will share her view of three upcoming films at the Adoxa Film Festival coming up here in Vancouver: The Ghosts in Our Machine, Forever, and The Horse Palace. For more info on these and many other great films, or to get tickets, please go to doxafestival.ca.
But Alyssa's not here.
Alyssa's not here. Sorry, that was a pre-recorded review. And we'll also be chatting with Mary Chris Staples of Liberation BC about their current cow ribbon campaign and the industry and time of year that inspires it all. The cow ribbon campaign is used to spread awareness about the serious issues that take place in the dairy industry, one of which is the early painful separation of mother and child. So I'm looking forward to discussing that further. We have a great show for you today, so please stay tuned.
Yeah, so I just wanted to talk about this article that came out in the New York Times a few weeks ago. It's by writer Jebediah Purdy. It's a commentary and editorial. It's called Open the Slaughterhouses. So I just wanted to start by just introducing how he introduces it by reading that bit of the beginning and then going into what we want to talk about. So he says, in 1999, as a writer for the American Prospect, I went into a slaughterhouse undercover with the help of some rebellious employees. The floor was slick with the residue of blood and suet, and the air smelled like iron. A part of my brain spent the whole time trying to remember which of Dante's circles this scene most resembled. Today, under legislation being pushed by business interests, that bit of journalistic adventure could earn me a criminal conviction and land me on a registry of animal and ecological terrorists. So-called ag gag laws proposed or enacted in about a dozen states make or would make criminals of animal rights activists who take covert pictures and videos of conditions on industrial farms and slaughterhouses. Some would even classify the activists as terrorists. So he goes on to say that the agriculture industry says that these images are unfair because they seem to show cruelty and brutality. But of course, what else are you going to expect to see when you're seeing animals being slaughtered? And he also goes on to say that, moreover, the industry says that the activists are trespassing. So there's the issue of safety as well, because, you know, they could hurt themselves if they're doing these undercover investigations. And he goes on to say, fairness and safety are real issues. So is transparency. And that is why we should require confined feeding operations and slaughterhouses to install webcams at key stages of their operations. List the URLs to the video on the packaging of the meat, that is. There would be no need for human intrusion into dangerous sites. No tricky angles or scary edits by activists. Just the visual facts. If the operators felt their work misrepresented, they could add cameras to give an even fuller picture. So more cameras. What do you think of that proposal, Jackie?
I think that's an awesome idea, and I think that should be proposed immediately. I think, you know, people just need to have that awareness with what they're eating. People just are so disconnected from what's on their plate and where it, how it gets there and where it's from.
Yeah, and we'll go on to discuss that a little bit. I just wanted to make a point that in the UK, they are working on legislation to have CCTV, that's closed circuit television, in slaughterhouses mandatory, and some of the slaughterhouses already have them. That's a little bit different than what we're proposing here, which is to actually have webcams that anyone can access. The CCTV, I believe, is only for, you know, those eyes that
apparently
need them, and it wouldn't be something open to the public. But, you know, parts of the world are kind of going in that direction. And what I think the number one thing that this would do, it would make the slaughterhouse industry accountable for their actions. It would, you know, the point of having these cameras would be to be transparent to consumers. But picture this, if people have access at any given time with the click of a mouse to see their food being killed and to see how it has been killed, what do you think? Do you think this is going to convert a lot of meat consumers to become vegetarians?
I think that would be definitely something that would happen, because we know how powerful film is. But also, I think it would people knowing in the slaughterhouse and factory farm industries, they would know, you know, we're being watched all the time. So maybe it would slightly improve their animals' conditions. I don't know.
I think definitely that industries that are they're made to answer for their actions, mm-hmm. because they're being publicized out there in the media. I think for sure that would definitely encourages them and pushes them and pressures them to do what's right, to do what the public wants, so that they, because, you know, they're all about profits. And if people aren't liking their business, they're not going to make that money. One effect of this proposal also would be that, you know, people, they might start changing the way that they eat because they're finally seeing what's happening to their food, but they could henceforth go further with that and start supporting laws for more humane treatment for farm animals. So, you know, think about what that means for just the way that our government laws protect animals. It's actually given really people the power of knowledge to have a powerful voice in our, you know, so-called democratic society. We do have the power of voting, and we do have public pressure to put on government. Another interesting point that the author makes is that opponents might compare this proposal to bills that require women to view images of their fetuses before having an abortion. What do you think of that comparison? Is that the same?
I don't think that's at all the same. First of all, because companies are profiting off of, you know, the animal exploitation industry.
For sure.
There's not really much profit. I don't know, maybe there is, but I don't think there's as much profit from the abortion
side of things. He says that the difference of this would be is that it's not forcing anyone to look at anything like it is forcing the women to look at their
fetuses.
They
just have the option.
They have the option. It would increase our resources for thinking and arguing what is wrong with that, right? I see that people, like a lot of people come into society, or the way that they're molded once they start to grow up is that they're being encapsulated by this protective bubble that is, you know, it's being put up there by the media and their upbringing, and you know, they only know the information that's in their little bubble here, right? So to prick that bubble, it allows that curiosity to start to seep out. And I think once you start, people's minds start knowing that they can expand and learn and have resources and actually think for themselves, that really just opens up a ton of possibilities. You know, if people are finally exposed to the truth, they will finally be able to make informed choices, not just in this, but in anything. We live in a supposedly free country, right? And, you know, it just makes you think that it would be encouraged as a way of life to just start questioning, ask questions, and be informed.
And hopefully it would give, you know, people more power and the industries a little less power, because they're such a powerful industry at this time.
And that's just a start. We need to start making those changes. So I just wanted to move on to something else. 2 weeks ago, I spoke about some of the most memorable guests who we've had on the show who are well known in their field for animal advocacy. But this week, I want to spend some time talking about other memorable people who we've had on the show in the past few years who are either local or who are just regular people from Vancouver and beyond and working on a grassroots level as a voice for the animals. At Animal Voices, we feel it's important to feature a wide range of viewpoints and a wide range of guests on the show who are each coming from a different place and therefore have a different experience to share with you, our listeners. And this is, after all, both the mandate of the Animal Voices show and of Vancouver Co-op Radio, which is to showcase a variety of voices in the material that we present on many different issues facing animals and thus people on the planet today. So just off the top of my head, some of the most memorable, guests that I can think of that kind of fit into this category. The first one that comes to mind is Whitney Hillman. She was one of my favorite guests when it comes to sharing a personal experience that changed her life in speaking up for the animals. She was a 16-year-old high school student in Kansas, and when it came time for everyone in her animal science class to send their science project chickens, who they had each raised as baby chicks, to be slaughtered, she rebelled against the system and stole/rescued her chicken from the school, making a name for herself in going against the grain and standing up for what she believed in, because there was no way that she was going to let her chicken die. And as a life-changing result, she went vegetarian from this experience even. It was a joy to have her on the show and to have her share her sincere and touching story with us, something really unique and heartfelt that really struck a chord in terms of individual activism in a person who is just being awakened to such new ideas. Another person I'd like to talk about is Janice Gillett, who has founded and runs a nonprofit pig sanctuary called Hearts and Noses, located here in Mission, BC, who we've mentioned on the show many times before. Janice pours her heart and soul into her sanctuary, and she's one of those unsung heroes who you won't often get to hear about in the mainstream media at all, but she needs to get the word out about the sanctuary organization in order to gain the community's support to keep it running. And so we are happy here at Animal Voices to be able to have given her a voice on the air to share her story, and in doing that, to also convey the strong messages that she has to offer when it comes to learning about animals in need, such as pot-bellied pigs, who are so commonly abandoned after they are too big to fit into people's apartments, and then they need a place to live out the rest of their lives, and Janice takes them in. And speaking of local sanctuaries, I'd also like to give a mention to Wendy Huntbach, who is another wonderful activist for the animals, who also puts her heart and soul into her rescue center, which is one that also needs the support of the local community, as it houses over 800 parrots who have also been surrendered by their owners because parrots just don't make very good pets. Wendy's interview was so engaging, and I was also very glad to be able to give her a voice to share with us the serious issues of exploitation that parrots face and the help that is needed to right these wrongs. We've also done feature interviews with many of the local organizations in Vancouver who are doing good work for the animals, such as the Fur Bearer Defenders, Liberation BC, who we actually have on the show today, the Vancouver Humane Society, the BCSPCA, Stop UBC Animal Research, and the Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association, to name some. These usually are underrepresented nonprofits, and they're giving a platform here on Animal Voices in which to relay important information on animal issues to the community at large. There's just so many more fantastic past interviews that I'd like to talk about. That's all the time we have for today, though. It is our spring member drive at Co-op Radio, and it ends today. Our goal for fundraising for today is to reach $200. If you value the work that we do here at Animal Voices Radio, we encourage you to please call in and make a donation. We do need to raise this money to keep the show on the air. As a token of our appreciation for every person who donates between, I guess it would be until today, maybe we'll even make it go till next week if you can't donate today, but the drive officially ends today. We will put you into a draw for a selection of 5 awesome prizes. These prizes are a copy of the book Vegan Secret Supper by Marita Anderson, a copy of the book High Stakes, Why and How to Eat Less Meat by Eleanor Boyle, who we had on the show last week, a copy of the Eating Vegan in Vegas ebook by Paul Graham, we had on the show a few weeks ago, a copy of the book Vegan Cooking for Carnivores, over 125 recipes so tasty you won't miss the meat by Roberto Martin, and a $10 gift certificate to Eternal Abundance, which is the raw vegan restaurant located in Vancouver. We can mail the gift certificate to you, and for any of the other prizes, you'll have to come to the station to pick them up in downtown Vancouver. Also, for every new person who makes a donation to CFRO and therefore joins as a member, you also have the chance to win dinner for two at Rhizome Cafe located in Vancouver. So make a donation. You can call in right now. You can call us at 604-684-8494 and someone will take your pledge over the phone. That's 604-684-8494. Or if you don't want to miss the show, you can call after the show. Someone will be here as well at 1 o'clock p.m. to answer. Or you can simply go to cooperadio.org and click on donate to Co-op Radio on the upper right-hand corner of the site and make your donation there. We'll announce the winners of our draw on the air after the membership drive, and we thank you in advance for your consideration to help keep our important programming on the airwaves in Vancouver and around the world.
Community radio makes community, builds community, needs you. Support Co-op Radio 100.5 FM this spring during our twice annual membership drive. Use the phone 604-684-8494. Use the net coopradio.org. You tell us how much you can afford. Please get your membership or make a donation now. Keep the drive alive at Co-op Radio CFRO. Volunteer radio for the living city. Help build it now. 684-8494. Co-opradio.org.
And here's what's happening in the vegan world these next coming months. So this weekend, tomorrow actually, we have the Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale. I believe it's happening, you know, in various places. Well, it's worldwide, so it's happening various places around the world. But also we have a local Vancouver Vegan Bake Sale, and the proceeds go to the wonderful Hearts on Noses Pig Sanctuary. Yay! In Mission. Yes. And this will be taking place tomorrow, like I said, from 3 to 5 p.m. at 3G Restaurant. And so please try to make it out. And if you have any things that you can donate, I believe you can find out.
That would be baked goods.
Yeah, sorry.
Not just things.
Yeah, sorry. If you have any baked goods that you can donate, I believe you can find out more through Liberation BC.
Yeah, they have it posted on their Facebook mm-hmm. page. I remember the first Worldwide Vegan Bake Sale that we had for Liberation BC. I donated some stuff for that and hung out there. And wow, we raised about $6,000. Yeah. It was a really great fundraiser.
Well, I will be baking a chai cake, so that will be delicious. So
come and eat Jackie's yes. chai cake. I'm not baking anything because I was going to be on a raw cleanse this week and I didn't want the temptations.
Yeah.
So next time.
And next week, from Monday, April 29th to Friday, May 3rd, it's Stick Up for Chickens Week. And that will be just standing outside with Liberation BC from, like I said, Monday to Friday, from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m., we'll be standing outside the slaughterhouse at Commercial Drive and East Hastings Street to educate the public and to bear witness to the suffering birds who are trucked in every day. This is with Liberation BC. And if you would like to help join in or help make signs, please contact Mary Chris at liberationbc.org for details. And we will actually have Mary Chris on the show today.
That sounds really interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, people think that we, or don't know perhaps, that we have slaughterhouses right here in the city, and we do. If you're ever driving on Powell mm-hmm. Street and you smell something really bad, that's the chicken slaughterhouse.
Yeah. And I know it's really early in the morning, it's 7 a.m., but that you know early. What? The chickens are worth it, so make it out there. And also, just another reminder as well, in connection with this, that May 4th is International Respect for Chickens Day. So just try to spread the awareness with all your family and friends. And Mother's Day, Liberation BC will also be doing a cow ribbon leafleting. And that is May 12th, Mother's Day, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. In conjunction with Liberation BC's cow ribbon campaign, they'll be downtown this Mother's Day to remind everybody that milk comes from a grieving mother. More information and location to be announced. To keep informed, check out liberationbc.org under the events section. And another reminder, the Ghosts in Our Machines screening is coming up at the Doxa Film Festival. Sorry. There will be two screenings, one on May 9th and again on May 10th, so get your tickets today. Humans have cleverly separated animals into three categories: domestic pets, wildlife, and the ghosts in our machines. The latter are those animals who suffer at the helm of global industries. This film follows internationally renowned photographer Joanne MacArthur as she travels around the world documenting the lives of these animals. The result is a cinematic portrait of the ghosts who keep the machine of the modern world running.
And we've had Joanne MacArthur on the show, so I just wanted to point out.
And also
out,
Liz Marshall, too.
And the director, Liz yes. Marshall. Go to animalvoices.org and just search their names if you want to hear those interviews. Mm-hmm. You saw the film, right?
I did, yeah. It was very powerful. So I suggest that everyone show this to all your family and friends as well. And just another reminder as well of Vita Vegan Con. This is 3 days full of classes.
Sold out.
Is it sold out?
But if you can, my sister just bought a ticket this week from someone who is selling them.
Yeah.
If you really want to go.
There's always people selling stuff. They change their minds last minute, so look on Craigslist and stuff. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. All right, and just another quick reminder of our membership drive that is keeping us on the air. This is the final week of the Spring Member Drive. So if you appreciate that the work that we do at Animal Voices to bring you quality animal-related programming each week, please show us your support by becoming a member of Co-op Radio on behalf of Animal Voices, and all contributions online are tax-deductible. As a token of our appreciation for every person that donates during the member drive, we will put you in a draw for the selection of the prizes that Allison mentioned earlier. So please give us a call here at 604-684-8494 or go to cooperadio.org under the Donate Now section. And coming up now, we have Alyssa's review of the three Doxa film festivals, or films that I mentioned earlier that will be playing at the Doxa film festivals: The Ghost in Our Machine, Forever, and The Horse Palace.
Hello, Animal Voices. Over the last week, I've had a chance to preview a few films that are being presented at Doxa Documentary Film Festival, May 3rd to May 12th in Vancouver. Three films in particular focus on human and non-human animal relationships, and I wanted to spend some time sharing my thoughts about those. Let's talk first about The Horse Palace.
This stable is a real stable. You see the stalls there, you know, everything.
Filmmaker Nadine Gomez paints a haunting portrait of Griffintown in Montreal, focusing on a crumbling horse stable called Horse Palace, one of the last remaining vestiges of the first working-class town in Canada. The stable is crumbling and threatened by the development of condos and businesses nearby, and the film traces the story of some of the people who've worked out of there for years operating horse-drawn carriages. The human aspect of the story is definitely interesting. People who've been working at the same job for many years and that's all they know, faced with change and urban development just quickly sprouting up around them. And of course, yeah, there's losses there and there's a lot of emotion. Of course, as an animal advocate, I'm looking at the non-human animal side of the story. And this is certainly not a palace for horses, nor was it ever. And they were never treated like royalty. In the film, there's often these scenes where they just focus on the sound of the chains, you know, while they're putting them on the horses or leading them into the stables. And the jangly sound of the chains gives me shivers and makes me feel ill, honestly. It sounds like slavery to me, and it's disturbing. And the palace itself in Montreal, which gets extremely cold in the winters, doesn't have proper heating, and of course it's cramped. And the horses don't get somewhere to just walk around freely ever. They're forced to toil in all weather conditions and dodge traffic and pound the pavement all day long carrying heavy loads, and I don't really find it romantic at all. They breathe in exhaust fumes and suffer respiratory ailments and develop debilitating leg problems from walking on hard surfaces. And of course, after the horses are worn out, after many years of this, they're usually sent to slaughter, not a sanctuary. Many cities in the world, including Paris, France, and London, England, have already banned horse-drawn carriages. Yeah, I think Canada, well, Vancouver and Montreal, need their own bans, for sure. There is a plea in the film to revitalize Griffintown and the Horse Palace and make it into a tourist attraction. There's a woman at a fundraising event who asks, "Are we going to throw away everything romantic just for efficiency and money?" Well, I think I'm not alone in thinking that some things are just better left in the past, and we don't need to romanticize the exploitation of animals. In a way, this film is kind of hopeful, just seeing that horse-drawn carriages and other forms of animal exploitation won't last forever, and one day they'll be a thing of the past. The Horse Palace shows at DOXA, Documentary Film Festival, on Sunday, May 5th at 12 p.m. at Van City Theater. So the next film I want to talk about is called Forever. It's a film by Amy Finkel about the lengths that people go to honor their pets, both in life and in death. So over the last couple generations, I'd say, companion animals are really becoming part of the family for most people. And the reality is that they live quite a short life, really not more than about 20 years. So most people will experience the death of a loved non-human animal in their lifetime. So this film just goes into how people deal with this. I'll share a little clip with you from the trailer. It starts with a poem on a gravestone for a dog named Anna.
Our hearts still ache in sadness and secret tears still flow. What it meant to lose you, no one will ever know.
There's still that stigma of how could you grieve over a pet? It's not a child, it's not a person, but that's exactly how we're interacting with our animals in the U.S. today. People often break our trust. Animals almost never do that.
They are little people. They just happen to have little fur coats on.
She'll get organic. Jessie, do you want some of your chicken cacciatore?
I probably spent more money on memorializing Tucker than I did when he was alive. I realize that so much of this is about me and not about Tucker, but I'm okay with that.
So I think Forever is actually really well made, and it covers a lot of different issues. And I think that everyone who's currently living with a companion animal, or, you know, who's experienced the death of a loved one, should definitely go see this film. It's a really fascinating look at the various ways that people memorialize their companion animals, from things like putting the ashes in beads or other art, to specialized caskets and with viewings, and then the pet cemetery. There's a really awesome pet cemetery shown in the film that seems to be run in a really great way. I'm sure there's others around that aren't run quite as well. And there's also that sort of shady aspect of people trying to just profit off of people's sadness and who are offering services that maybe aren't that honorable. Oh, and then it goes into some weirder things like taxidermy or freeze drying to keep the body of your companion animal. And some interesting people who've done that and who aren't really shameful at all, but who, you know, get a lot of flack for it. And then it goes into mummification and cloning. And that's where it starts to get really weird. And it leaves me with a really funny feeling in my tummy that something's not right. But then, you know, when you look at other cultures and how they memorialize the dead, well, mummification has been around for a long time, and actually cats were mummified, so it goes into a bit of that history. But there's a lot of sort of strange characters in this movie, and I myself love films about strange people doing things that aren't necessarily accepted by society, but it makes you think about them in a different way and expands your mind. So let me just say again, I really enjoyed Forever. I know humans have a deep need for ritual and for connection, so I think it's just natural, and I think these services will just grow and grow. As it says in the film, the death service industry didn't necessarily create these services looking for profit, but they're mostly just responding to a demand. So to see Forever, it's playing at DOXA Sunday, May 5th, 8:30 p.m. at Pacific Cinematheque. More information at doxafestival.ca. And now for the most hotly anticipated documentary showing at DOXA for animal lovers. It's The Ghosts in Our Machine,
It's been in the making for the last couple years. It's by Canadian filmmaker Liz Marshall, who spoke at the Animal Advocacy Camp in February of this year. And we also interviewed her on February 22nd on Animal Voices, if you'd like to learn more about the making of the film. So what it is a cross-platform feature that asks the question, are animals property to be owned and used, or are they sentient beings deserving of rights? So this film follows internationally renowned photographer Joanne MacArthur, who's based in Toronto. We've also had her on the Animal Voices show. And she travels around the world documenting the lives of the animals that are deemed the ghosts in our machine. They're not the domestic pets or wildlife. They're the animals exploited for the benefit of humans. Caged foxes, lab monkeys, and beagles bred for research are just some of the ghosts that Joanne encounters on her journey. It's part investigation and part art project. Joanne's goal is to change the way we view our relationships with animals. And that's the same as the filmmaker, Liz Marshall. And this is a wonderful sort of team effort. They both have the same mission. And I know that through talking to Liz on our radio show, she was definitely changed by the experience of working on the film. And she said everyone who worked on the film was changed. And I really can't say enough good about this film. It's what we need right now, and I'm so excited it's being shown to a mass audience. In about a week or so, it's being shown at Hot Docs Documentary Film Festival in Toronto, and it actually made the cover of Point of View, the documentary film magazine. One of Joanne's photos made the cover, and that's really exciting, and I really think this is a film that's digestible by mass audiences. It's not too graphic, but it gets the message across about the sentience of these beings and the individuality and how wrong it is that we're exploiting them. One interesting thing is at Doxa in Vancouver, there's going to be a special showing that's called Rated Y for Youth. It's a number of films that are specifically for a youth audience. And there's going to be a panel. So Liz Marshall will be in town. She's the director, writer, and producer of Ghosts in Our Machine, as well as Kelly Davidson, who's an animal lover and the shop manager at a Vancouver branch of Lush, a cosmetics store. Kelly Davidson actually went through a ghost-free journey, which is part of the cross-platform element of Ghosts in Our Machine. It's a customized vegan lifestyle and coaching sort of program. So that'll be really interesting to hear them talk in that panel, and I'm really excited about that. The Ghosts in Our Machine is showing as part of DOXA, the Documentary Film Festival in Vancouver, on Thursday, May 9th at 6 p.m. at Van City Theatre, and Friday, May 10th at 12:30 p.m., also at Van City Theatre. Tickets available at doxafestival.ca, and that one will sell out, crossing fingers. I think it sold out pretty quickly in Toronto. Also, if you can't make it to the theater and you just can't wait to see it and you want a taste, make sure to go to theghostsinourmachine.com, where you can explore an interactive story featuring Joanne MacArthur as part of their cross-platform feature. I haven't looked at that yet, but I really look forward to it. And now I'm going to share with you a song called Give Up the Ghost by Radiohead. It's featured in The Ghosts in Our Machine. Enjoy.
And I just want to send a sincere thank you to Alyssa for sending that to us and contributing to the show today, even though she couldn't make it for that. Those thoughtful reviews, that was very,
very wonderful.
Very wonderful. Thanks, reviews. Alyssa. Thanks, Alyssa. So for today's interview, we'll be speaking with Mary Chris Staples from Liberation BC about the Cow Ribbon Campaign. Liberation BC is our local animal rights and animal awareness group with the mission to expose animal exploitation through outreach and education, to promote a vegan lifestyle as the most effective and attainable way to protect animals, and to build and provide support for a strong community of effective animal advocates. Hello, Mary Chris, and thank you for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So first off, I wanted to ask you to tell us what the Cow Ribbon Campaign is all about. How did it all start and what sparked the idea?
All righty. Well, the Cow Ribbon Campaign consists of people wearing little tiny ribbons that have a little dairy cow pattern on them. And the idea is that they will wear them and that these will spark conversations where people will say, hey, what's that you're wearing? And people can tell them about the plight of dairy cows in our world. The idea came about in 2010 when one of the original founders of Liberation BC, Joanne Chang, she noticed that there were a lot of campaigns that were using ribbons. You know, there was the little white ribbon for violence against women and you know, all kinds of ribbons were going around at that time, and she thought, hey, what a great idea. Why don't we start one with our cow ribbons? And so, yeah, the main idea of it is to raise some awareness and mostly to honor these mother cows.
Great. I know I've got my ribbon on today, so
I'll
try to spread lots of word about that.
I just wanted to give a shout-out to Joanne because she was the one that brought me to the Animal Voices show in 2009.
Great.
We kind of took it over, and she was awesome on the show.
Joanne, you're a life changer.
Oh, my gosh, she's amazing.
So yeah. Can you tell me why you chose Mother's Day as the time to spread this message? Is the ribbon meant to be worn just around Mother's Day or all year?
I think the idea, it's great if it's worn all year because I think this conversation is a year-round thing. But we chose Mother's Day to really, really highlight it because I think it's one of the most obvious ones where the relationship between the mother cow and her baby, oh my gosh, it's just so, so incredibly sad. I think a lot of people don't realize that a mother cow has to have a baby every single year in order to produce milk for humans to consume. And so this mother has, you know, goes through all the pregnancy, has a baby. The babies are, baby is immediately taken away from her, and she goes through terrible grieving process. You know, obviously the baby is going through its own grieving, not being with its mother. And apparently, I've never heard it, but I've heard from some people that the bellows that these cows give off when their babies are taken away is just, it's just horrific.
And they'll cry for days and days.
Yeah, they will do it for days and days before they, you know, eventually give up. But it's a long, long process. And I think the other part of it is, as well, is just the horrible abuses that are done to their bodies in order to artificially inseminate them. You know, where a farm worker is forcing his arm, you know, right up almost to his shoulder into the anus of the cow, you know, to manipulate and plant devices, you know, through her cervix and into her uterus, as women, you know, just to think of these indignities that are being done. So we just thought Mother's Day is a good day to say, hey, these mothers suffer, lots and lots of other mother animals do, but this is a good day to honor them and bring attention to what they go through.
And I think that's something that all women can certainly relate with. So branching off of that, what do you think are some of the most common myths people still maintain when it comes to dairy cows and the dairy industry in general?
I think one of the most common ones is that people seem to think that because they get to live that their lives aren't so bad. They're thinking, well, they're not killed, so they must be okay. And I think they also believe that they all graze and live wonderful lives and are more than happy to donate their milk to humans. So this is, you know, I think this is a big fallacy. And it's not anyone's fault that they believe this. I think the dairy industry has done a wonderful job of keeping this truth from the public. What they don't know is that they spend most of their lives standing in one spot hooked up to a milking machine. What they don't know is that they must have a baby every year in order to produce milk and that those babies are taken from them every single time. What they don't know is that once they are considered spent, they are trucked off to slaughter. You know, and with all of that, they also believe that they need these dairy products in order to be healthy. So there are a lot of things people believe, and it's, you know, it's not surprising that they believe this because they are being told over and over and over through the media that that's the situation.
And like you said, with many people still under the false illusions of necessity for cow's milk perpetuated from the dairy industry's many years of persistent advertising, how do you find people tend to respond to any new information or awareness of the opposite? And what is the most effective way for people to share this information without being met with opposition?
Yeah, what I find is that people are usually shocked. And I remember when I first learned all of this, I was shocked. You know, it was the one area where you thought, no, happy cows. So I think they're shocked, but they have a lot of trouble believing it because they've been taught the complete opposite all their lives. And in order to believe this, they have to believe that somewhere along the way, someone has been maybe not completely truthful with them. You know, whether it's by their own fault or by being misled by governments and large corporations. So I find they usually have just a hard time figuring this out. What we usually do to try and encourage them is to just do more research themselves. You know, don't take our word for it. Go and do some research. There are some great books and websites out there. Movies like Got the Facts on Milk has a lot of information about, you know, just the health sides of things. And the one that you were talking about, the review you were just doing, The Ghost in Our Machine, does quite a big segment on the whole dairy industry as well. So we try to give them resources and try to encourage them to find out for themselves. But I think just bringing this up, it plants a little question in their minds where they need to get more information.
And I just wanted to emphasize the power of film. You mentioned the documentary, Got the Facts on Milk, also known as the Milk Documentary. And Liberation BC actually did a public screening of this film last year. And
that's right.
Yeah, and because of that, we presented a dairy show last year where we had the filmmaker Shira Lane on the show. And this is just an amazing film. I encourage people to watch it because not everyone is too susceptible to, you know, going out and doing their own research on the web or reading in that. But the power of film, the power of images and video, I think, is there to reach just beyond what you can find on the internet, and it can really speak to people. And this film is like really funny and engaging, and I think it can really appeal to people's sensibilities.
Yeah, that's a great point for sure.
All right. And I think people in society are somewhat used to seeing, you know, ribbons of varying colors and styles used to spread awareness of a wide range of issues, like you mentioned earlier, from breast cancer to suicide prevention. However, people are not used to seeing a cow spotted one, so of course this leads to questions. Do you have any stories or know of any of changing someone's perspective or influencing change because of someone noticing the cow ribbon and asking questions? Or what are some of the most common questions and comments you receive?
We definitely get a lot of questions because they are so cute and they are so different. So people are always like, oh, what's that all about? So they're pretty, which is wonderful when you get people asking and then you can tell them. And their initial thoughts are of mothers and baby cows, and which is a really, really beautiful sight. And then when they hear more information, you know, obviously, you know, it becomes a little bit more of a sad story. The most, for me, the most common questions I get, or who I get them from, are from my students, because I always wear them, you know, my cow ribbon to school.
You're a school teacher.
Yeah, I'm a high school teacher.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it's great. And young people are so great because they're just super curious and they don't get too defensive. They'll listen to what you have to say and then they'll ask you another question.
They just soak it in.
They just soak it in and the wheels start to turn. And so because of their age, for a lot of them, it's pretty tricky to really change their whole lifestyle because they're depending on their parents cooking for them and that kind of thing. But what I find happens is after the initial conversation, they come back many times to ask me for advice about, oh, what other things can I, you know, eat instead of this or drink instead of this? Or they'll come and they'll find something. They'll tell me, Miss, have you heard about this? And they give me some whole new thing that I haven't. So for me, that's the most exciting thing, is just seeing them talk about it and get excited about it.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's good to be able to influence the young.
You're planting the seeds.
Exactly.
And that's what's really important.
Exactly. And along with the fact of the horrible mistreatment of cows and calves by the dairy industry, are the awful health impacts on humans, anemia, osteoporosis, hormonal imbalances, along with many other health effects, are caused primarily by dairy consumption. Yet, unfortunately, very few people are aware of this. How would you suggest that we try and effect change so that these health issues related to dairy consumption can be made available to the public?
Okay, and this is really, really a tough one. I mean, the dairy industry, like all agricultural industries, is very powerful and very wealthy, and they just keep pumping out the message that we need to drink milk, eat yogurt and cheese. The problem is that, you know, we know that, because we've done some reading, that scientists agree that all of these claims are not based on really strict science. There's so much evidence now that not only does calcium from dairy not decrease the risk of fractures, but it may in fact even increase it. Countries where very little dairy is consumed have super low rates of osteoporosis, and the countries with high dairy intake have high rates. So, and so many people these days are lactose intolerant. So, the evidence is out there, but it's really hard to get the message out because of the media. What I think is great is the Physicians for Responsible Medicine. I think they do a lot of really, really good work in trying to get to debunk some of those myths. As far as our group, you know, what we do is we just keep on leafleting whenever we get a chance. We screen whatever movies we can find out there. We work with other groups to try and spread the word. We promote books like The China Study by Dr. T. Colin Campbell, which is an amazing, amazing book about the health effects of food. And dairy in particular. The Food Revolution by John Robbins has an amazing chapter on dairy. Films like Forks Over Knives is a really powerful one. So we just keep trying to promote that kind of thing. And, of course, our Cow Ribbon campaign is a huge one for us because it really is a way to just get these conversations going. What I would love someday is to get more of this information into the school systems. I've thought about trying to organize some professional development for teachers and then, you know, see where that leads and see where there's interest. But that's another tough one, is to get it into the schools where milk is sold.
Absolutely. And I guess that's probably their primary target is, you know, the kids, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And just after Earth Day, hopefully it has inspired people to become more environmentally friendly. Can you share some of the impact that the dairy industry in particular has on the environment?
Yeah, so dairy farming, just as with all animal production, causes a lot of environmental problems. One dairy cow, for instance, produces 120 pounds of waste per day, which is a huge contributor to water pollution. Cows eat grass, and then they produce methane gas through their flatulence, and this is one of the biggest contributors to global warming. Their urine produces nitrous oxide, another contributor to global warming. And for those who think that cows, you know, get to graze all over the place, well, the ones that do are taking up thousands of acres of rainforest. So these are just a few of the problems caused by dairy cows, and then you multiply that by all the other animals, and it's a big problem.
Absolutely. And I know we briefly touched on this earlier, but since Mother's Day is coming up, what do you find to be the most effective tool or way for bringing this up with mothers, your own or others? And what tips do you have for people transitioning to a dairy-free diet?
Right. So one thing we're really excited about this Mother's Day, we're going to be leafleting downtown with our dairy leaflets. And one of our members is bringing her one-year-old daughter with her, and she's going to be dressed up as a baby cow. So we're relying big time on the cuteness factor. We're going to have also a couple of big people in cow costumes, and a group of us will be selling our cow ribbons and handmade leaflets. So we're really hoping that this will attract, you know, especially some of the little kids and their mothers to come and hear the story. And in past years when we've done things like this, we've noticed that the mothers in particular respond quite strongly to the information. It's just so in them. They immediately feel what that mother cow is going through. So, you know, I think just bringing it up with mothers, again, the cow ribbon is just a really, really good way of doing it. Or it is Mother's Day, just a reminder to, you know, to think of other mothers. And I've rarely met a mother that didn't just kind of like, oh, my gosh, I never thought of it like that. And a few fathers, too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I would hope they would, you know, make that connection, especially with the information that you provide. So how can how can people help with this or any other campaigns with Liberation BC?
Sorry, say that one more time. I'm in my classroom and there was a big noise.
Oh, sorry. Just very quickly, how can people help with this or any other campaigns with Liberation BC?
Excellent question. Thank you. We'd love for them to go to our website, and you think I would have that right. So the cowribbon.com is a great place to go, and they can find out how they can buy ribbons or, you know, buy a bunch of them and sell them themselves. They can go to our website, liberationbc.org. for all kinds of information, our Facebook page, our Twitter page, anybody who, for instance, wants to come out and help us with our leafleting campaign on May 12th, which is for Mother's Day, can find all the information they need right there on our website.
Great. Thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks,
Mary Chris,
Chris,
and sharing this information with our listeners. For more...
Yeah, great. Thank you very much for having us.
For more information on the dairy industry or to get your ribbon, please visit cowribbon.com, as Mary Chris said. And for more information on Liberation BC and all the great work they do, you can look them up at liberationbc.org.
Okay, and I have this week's news for us. This week, as I don't think we mentioned, it's the World Week for Animals and Laboratories. So a very fitting news story for this week is that the Harvard Primate Research Center announced that they have been investigated for animal welfare violations in the deaths of four monkeys. They'll be largely shut down by 2015. And the university cited a tough economic climate for research funding and a shift in long-term strategies. The announcement apparently stunned people inside and outside the institution, as Harvard had invested significant resources in the New England Primate Research Center in Southboro to correct care and oversight problems that resulted in the monkey deaths between 2010, that would be June 2010, and February 2012. U.S. Department of Agriculture inspectors found numerous violations of animal welfare rules after the deaths, an embarrassment that caused consternation across the university. But medical school leaders said that the decision to close the 51-year-old facility was unrelated to its problems. Now, I got this story from the Boston Globe, where it really goes on to talk about how this is a devastation for the people that worked there. It really talks largely about jobs and people losing their jobs. But my question is, what about the animals, Jackie? What do you think?
No,
I mean,
kidding.
I think this is a great thing because Harvard's a leader, right? Harvard is a leader in its medical school. And I hopefully would hope that, you know, they are paving the way for other schools to be shutting down their labs as well, right?
You would hope this would, you know, just start the wheels in motion, and hopefully it does, you know, spread across the globe.
So they're actually going to be relocating close to 2,000 monkeys, and some of them probably will go to some of the other national primate research centers, and they said that none of the animals will be euthanized. So, I mean, I guess for now, right? They eventually do get euthanized, so I'm not sure what that means. Good news for the animals, though, in Canada this week. Did you hear that the EU court dismissed an Inuit bid to overturn the seal product ban? This just happened yesterday.
I did hear about that, and that's very exciting.
Yeah, so just a really short story here. Yesterday, a European court dismissed a Canadian application that sought to overturn a ban on seal products. The General Court of the EU rejected the claim from the Inuit Tapirit, Kanatami, and other groups that had wanted to overturn a ban that devastated much of the consumer demand for clothes and other products. So this Inuit group and the Fur Institute of Canada and other different sealing organizations had argued that the 2010 ban was effectively preventing seal products from any source entering the EU, even though the Inuit are to be exempt for the ban. So this ban does not include the Inuit, but they're saying that it's still hampering them. So the Fur Institute argued that the EU ban was politically motivated and not based on sound rationale. And the court wrote that the applicants failed to make a persuasive case, and they said that the applicants, who are of very different origins and for the most part do not belong to the Inuit community, interesting, have not demonstrated the effects on their right to property in relation to the different categories into which they fall. So what this basically means for the animals is that, yay, the European Union, which it actually is, doesn't have much of a market anyways. And it was said in the news this week that even if the ban was overturned, people still felt like there wouldn't just be a lot of demand anyways, because there isn't a lot of demand as it is in the EU for seal products. So there you go.
Yeah.
So that's all the time we have for news for today. And I just wanted to tell you, you've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. On next week's show, please tune in. It's going to be exciting because we're going to be inviting you to call in with your questions and or comments for us at Animal Voices. If you have anything that's been burning you that you want to ask Jackie or Alyssa, or actually, no, Alyssa won't be there. Jackie or I.
And Cynthia. Yay.
And we'll have a guest host Cynthia on the show next week. Please do call in. It'll be fun. And I think we're going to do a giveaway too. We here at the Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And also please do check out our website, animalvoices.org, where all of our shows can be downloaded from. Remember, it's our Co-op Radio Spring Member Drive on right now. And if you appreciate the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please do show us your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. To make a donation of any amount, please call us right now at 604-684-8494. We'll take your pledge over the phone, or you can also go to cooperadio.org and click on Donate to Co-op Radio there. Remember to indicate on your donation that it's going towards Animal Voices, and these donations are also eligible for tax receipts. We're closing the show with a song called The Truth About Dairy Cows by Jonathan Mann. I don't think it'll get to the end of the song, but please note there is some profane language at the end of the song, but we do feel it's important because it's relevant. It depicts a real live recording of a worker at the Conklin Dairy Farm who was prosecuted for the cruelty that he was caught inflicting upon animals, and we feel that's important to share. Stay tuned now for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
I used to think if I didn't eat meat, that I was doing my part. I couldn't give up cheese and dairy, and I didn't see why I should start. After all, cows always give milk to be enjoyed by me and you. I never stopped to question whether or not that is true, but now I know that dairy cows get pregnant just about their entire lives, artificially inseminated, moving lonely wives,
giving birth every year, baby cows just taken away, and that's how you get your cheese. Every day, cows, cows, they're just mothers without the children. Cows, cows, they're crying out to find them, when it all happens over again.
share their mama's fate. They too will be dairy cows, pumped full of hormones, starting at the age of one. They normally live to 25, but 5 years of this and they're done. Cows, cows, they're just mothers without their children.
They got no milk to give, so in the eyes of this system, well, they got no right to live. They are just a thing left over, wasted life into a meal, when they end up on a dinner plate, cause someone ordered veal.
Cows, cows, they're just mothers without their children. Cows, cows, they are crying out to find them.
Can we stab her? I broke her tail for Cleve. Kept stabbing her ass, beat her. Next gay guy said we're gonna send her a beef because she had mastitis on her. Couldn't get her in the parlor. We beat the fuck. I mean, I drunk that cow in the barn, baby, and I beat that fucker till her face was like this big around.